Blog Talk Radio.
I'm Kimberly Jones, technical director for Tell Me More, and an African-American whom I greatly admire is A. Philip Randolph, a champion for labor equality. Asa Philip Randolph started his career as an actor in Harlem, but he soon noticed unfair work conditions for blacks and saw the need to organize workers in various industries. By the mid-1920s, he had organized the Brotherhood of Sleeping Car Porters, a large union representing black railroad workers. His influence stretched to the White House with the signing of the Fair Employment Act of 1941, and he was a key organizer of the historic 1963 March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom. Here he is addressing the National Press Club just days before that march.
Negroes want the same things that white citizens possess, all of their rights. They want complete equality, and no force under the sun can stem and block and stop this civil rights revolution which is now underway.
Perhaps the diversity of the modern workplace is sometimes taken for granted. But when I think about the life and work of A. Philip Randolph, I am reminded that the rights I now enjoy exist because of his devotion to a great cause.
Well, good morning. Thank you for tuning in to Locker Talk with host Barry Barnes on the Bachelor News Radio Network, where you hear about NFL stars of tomorrow today. I'm your host, Barry Barnes, founder and CEO of Locker-Report.com. And you guys can always reach out to me directly at any one of my social handles on Facebook, LockerReport.com, also the new Locker Talk podcast that's on Facebook, on Twitter at Locker_Report, Instagram, LockReport100, all small caps, or you guys can simply shoot me an email directly at BarryBarnes@Locker-Report.com. I hope everyone is safe at their locations where they are, that you guys are looking forward for the great weekend, have some good weather, you know, over here on the East Coast. So that's something that I'm looking forward to throughout this weekend, and I hope that everyone is having themselves a great, great day to kick off their weekend. First of all, I hope that all your listeners really happy and pleased with the way how Bachelor News Radio Network is starting the shows off with Black History Month facts. It's been something that I've been learning. It's great to see how LA is putting out different names other than the normal names that we hear every year, and rightly so. You know, you can't never stop talking about Dr. Martin Luther King, you know, Harriet Tubman, George Washington Carver. You cannot stop talking about these great legends, but to hear other names is something that is very appreciative. And to add to that, and on this show, we're going to talk about some players from the NFL Regional Combine. And last week we talked about and announced how there will be two workouts for the NFL Regional Combine platform in March from the 27th. The 29th in Miami at the Miami Dolphins practice facility, where I will be there to evaluate more talent and get this party rolling for the upcoming stars of tomorrow. So what this show is all about, getting ready to promote and highlight these guys for the rest of their career. So I'm looking forward, you know, to that workout as I am every single year. But before I move on to continue with the Black History fact that sports world, just to add to the excellence that's been provided by Bachelor News Radio Network, that this year's Super Bowl 54, a lot of you guys don't know, definitely was a historical moment for African Americans, because if you look back at the when the Chiefs last made it to the Super Bowl, which was in 1966, there were no African Americans officials on the field. You know, matter of fact, you know, there were players on the field, and besides, you know, your center and your quarterback, and your free safeties. You know, other than that, they were – that's the only time you actually saw African-Americans on the field playing skill positions. But in terms of officiating, there were none. But this last Super Bowl, Super Bowl 54, when Kansas City Chiefs had defeated the San Francisco 49ers, it was a twist, so to speak, that in positions where when the last time the Chiefs had went to the Super Bowl in 1966, there were no black quarterbacks, as we know, and there were no black coaches. But in this matchup, Eric Bieniemy, offensive coordinator, African-American, and Patrick Mahomes, quarterback, African-American. And you have each team that was filled with black players. So that was a change. But the biggest thing to emphasize in that game was that there were five Super Bowl African-American officials in that game, which was something that was amazing. That I didn't say we got overlooked, but something that definitely needed, you know, to be highlighted. And among those referees and all these guys who I know very well were Phil Judge, Michael Banks, line judge Carl Johnson, umpire Barry Anderson, back judge Greg Sneed, and side judge Boozy Cheeks, who actually went to Morgan State University. And also we have several officials that actually came through the NFL. I mean, they actually came through the HBCU school. So that's something that I pretty much will talk about down the road when I get closer to the officiating clinic, something that I'm definitely going to elaborate on. So out of the 122 officials, 36 of them are African-American. And the process is definitely growing. When I go to the development, the official development program that they have in May, it's awesome to see how more African-Americans are, you know, starting to get implemented into the officiating with the NFL. So that's great. So with that being said, Black History Note, Super Bowl 54 had the most African-Americans that actually be a call Super Bowl with the five gentlemen that I had mentioned. And then at the same time, was history in itself since the Chiefs last went to the Super Bowl in 1966. There have been three African-American quarterbacks, and we know all about Doug Williams with his historical one, and what Russell Wilson, what he did with Seattle, and then Patrick Mahomes was the third. The cool part is that all three of them won the Super Bowl, which is great. So it shows that not only African-Americans can play the position, something that all football fans knew for years, for decades, especially in the African-American community, knew that we can, you know, have guys to represent as quarterbacks in the league. You know, now we can add and say, hey, we're Super Bowl winning quarterbacks, and what's the conversation about now? Now, since the players are starting to come in more as quarterbacks as African-Americans, now we can start working on the coaches, which is another topic for another day. I only deal with the players and the evaluation process, so I'm going to stay away from that, but that is something that will be addressed soon. So hopefully we'll start to see some changes in that Eric Bieniemy and a host of others will get an opportunity to be the main guy from the sideline because they earned it. They're veterans. They've been there. They've done that. Most of them played in this wonderful game. And now with their knowledge from being on the field as a player translate to these guys being on the sidelines to help develop other players and get the best out of their teams. So this is something that we're looking forward to. You listen to Lock and Talk on the Bachelor News Radio Network, where you hear about NFL stars of tomorrow, today. So this is going to be something that's very, very interesting to watch down the line. Now, last week when I talked about the workouts, especially with the HBCU platform, fantastic. Really starting to get some emphasis on the HBCU product. And I had a couple of listeners that sent in messages last week, and I answered them. But there was one that I did not get to. And one of the questions that they had came was, is the NFL going to continue with the combine every year? Last week I answered that question. I believe, without knowing the details on that, I really believe that they will do it every year, knowing the heartbeat of Troy Vincent, the NFL executive vice president of football operations. This is something that he spearheads and has full-fledged everything wrapped into this. So this is a big thing. I believe that it will be successful. Of course, the success rate is going to play a major role, but I think the success rate is going to be really, really good. So I do see this, envision this to last a long time. Will the NFL have players represented in the combine from each HBCU program? I answered that last week. No, because not every player that came from the HBCU program that's draft eligible for this year is frankly not good enough. Like a lot of other schools where they have a lot of players that's, you know, not NFL level or quad or tier players to get to the NFL. So to answer that question, no. So that's not now the only one. And is this the best year for black quarterbacks in terms of starters and success? Now, that's one question that was not addressed last week, but I'm going to address it now. The best thing I would say each year when it comes down to the draft and each playing season, it becomes more of a better year for African-Americans to be not only quarterbacks in the league, but also to be starters. With the path that was laid through Hall of Famer Warren Moon, and then it just took some time from there with Randall Cunningham's, you know, your Cordell Stewart's of the world, your Tony Banks, you know, although he wasn't a star in the league, but he did play a role with this when you have, you know, other players that came down the line, you know, the Jeff Blakes of the world. You know, these guys help trend a path for African-Americans to be able to play the most highly coveted position in football and pretty much in almost all of sports, the NFL quarterback. And so now when you have guys like Russell Wilson going to the Super Bowl twice, winning one of those Super Bowls, and then you see with the Cam Newtons of the world, don't forget with how Michael Vick helped change the game in a lot of sense. We're just starting to see the fruits of it now, because when Michael Vick was doing his thing on the NFL back in the late 90s going into the 2000s, that when coaches from Little League and high school recognized his style of play, you know, they implemented that system within recreational football, then it is built up. And it's at the point now where you're starting to see more players like Michael Vick. And you can look at, you know, Lamar Jackson, although it was before Lamar Jackson, look at how Cam Newton played. It really, really showed, you know, what a scrambling quarterback can do, how you have African-American quarterbacks that not only can move but can throw the ball, which you have to do in the NFL. You are not going to be successful just running around on the field. You got to be able to know how to throw the ball and deliver down the field. Russell Wilson has shown it, and Patrick Mahomes clearly has shown it. You know, we see Cam Newton showing signs of it, but he's not consistent, and Lamar Jackson is not there yet. But it's one of those things that you have to recognize, that this is something that was a process, starting with the style of play, now with in the African-American community playing that position, that it is it's a place for it. Each year, you're starting to see more and more players come up, and I believe that each year, the success for African-Americans playing the quarterback position, eventually becoming starters, each year is a better year as it progresses. And when you have soon the face of the league, of a black quarterback being the face of the league, and Patrick Mahomes, that says a lot. I know one thing in my household, that with my boys, my oldest one is in college, but my other two, Zakari, he's not even thinking about trying to play no sport. But my youngest two, when they look at Patrick Mahomes and look at Lamar Jackson, these guys, you know, say to themselves that, you know, they believe that they can do it too. So it is a huge inspiration, something that I see within the four walls of my home, how much of an impact these young quarterbacks are having in the NFL. You listen to Locker Talk on the Bachelor News Radio Network, where you hear about NFL stars for tomorrow today. So that answered the other questions, and I thank you guys, you know, listeners, that keep shooting in, you know, those questions, giving me more to talk about, to answer. I'm definitely not going to run away from any question. If there's something I don't know, trust me, I will get the answers for you. But for the most part, send them all to me. I'll be right on top of it to make sure that you guys, as long as I'm being educated, my job is to educate you, the listener, to look at football, not only just for what you see on the play on the field, but some of the things that's progressing off the field to help make the product on the field a whole lot better. So with the workouts coming in April, looking forward to that. During the next couple of weeks, we know about the scouting combine, which will kick off next week in Indianapolis. After that, that's when everything hits full throttle, going forth to the pro days, and then ultimately the regional combine platform workouts, which will not be televised. But you guys continue to listen to Locker Talk and also keep going to locker-report.com. You guys will be abreast on everything that's going on and get you guys all psyched up for those unknown players that you guys don't know now, but you guys will definitely find out much later down the road. When we come back, we're going to take a quick pause. We want to get to some of the players from the NFL Regional Combine for 2019, how NFL Network have their top 100. I have my top 10 from the players from the NFL Regional Combine platform, and I will go through that list of names as soon as we come back. Tune in.
Hey, this is L.A. Batzler reminding you, if you're looking for real discussion on sports, politics, religion, and other topics, you need to join us on Mondays at 6 p.m. Eastern at WCOMFM.org, on Tuesdays at 7 p.m. at blogtalkradio.com/LA-Batzler, and on Thursdays at the same web address. Follow us on Facebook at Pad Nation, on Twitter, Pad Nation, the number 2, at Twitter, LinkedIn, and you can email us with your requests, your comments, your concerns, anything you want at our email address at labatchelor40@gmail.com. Follow us on Facebook and Pad Nation, Instagram, and of course, if you miss any part of our broadcast, make sure you go to thebachelorpadnetwork.com and listen and enjoy the Bachelor Pad.
All right, welcome back. Welcome back to Locker Talk on the Bachelor News Radio Network, where you hear about NFL stars of tomorrow today. I'm your proud host, you hear my voice, Barry Barnes, founder and CEO of locker-report.com, where you guys can always reach out to me on any one of my social handles, any one of my contacts on Twitter at locker_report, on Instagram, locker-report100, all small caps. On Facebook, LockReport.com, and also make sure you like Locker Talk Podcast that's on Facebook as well, as the content from the show will be related over there. Everything in connection with the Bachelor News Radio Network. And like LA said on the commercial, make sure you guys tune into this network. The network is growing, folks. Anything you need to hear or want to know about in the world of religion, politics, entertainment, social matters, of course, sports, make sure you check out all the shows on the Bachelor News Radio Network. All right, now, to the fun part. Now, like I mentioned before the break, NFL Network has their top 100. And then you have other sites that have their top 100 players and things like that. It's all good. It's all cute. It's good stuff. However, when it comes down to the NFL Regional Combine, most of those guys don't know those guys. And that's fine. That's okay. That's why I'm here. And through the combine itself, did a workout. This year, there were 70 players in the NFL Regional Combine platform that graced NFL sidelines this season. Some had played minor roles. Some was recovering from injury. And they had some that played large roles, huge roles in team weekly success, so to speak. No, not everyone gets an opportunity to play in the postseason or to win a Super Bowl. But this year, as it continued, that at least two players from the NFL Regional Combine platform has gone to a Super Bowl since 2013, and at least one of those players won a Super Bowl each year since 2013 as well. And I'm going to get to one of those guys who definitely made the top 10 list. And do the Locker Report top 10 list, and this article will be on the site shortly, but podcast show. I'm going to jump right into it before it comes out in print. And to give you guys a heads up, everything with these 10 players I'm about to mention really talks about their consistency throughout the course of the season. you know, how their availability was huge, their impact on the field, and a lot of things, a lot of times things don't necessarily show up on stats. But what was evident was their play that helped check their team's competitive each week as they stepped on the field. Now, not everyone won every single week. However, with these players that came from the NFL Regional Combine, helped their teams to be competitive week in and week out. And starting with number one, the top guy from the NFL Regional Combine platform that performed this year was none other than Washington Redskins rookie linebacker Cole McComb. Cole came through the process last year and had a fantastic workout from North Carolina, middle linebacker. And when he was one of those guys that I tagged and said, yeah, he's definitely going to be an NFL player. He definitely has something in there. And when the Washington Redskins drafted him in the fifth round, knowing that the Redskins was in transition as far as releasing their older linebackers, and then at the same time they had some players that were injured or recovering from injury the previous year, I knew that Cole had a chance to be a starter in this league. And Jay Gruden recognized it and his skill set and his intelligence right away and pretty much said during the offseason, as a matter of fact, right after the draft, he'd see Cole actually calling plays on the field. And that's what he did this season. And he had a great season this year. Not only would he help keep the Redskins very competitive, but he also kept these guys, you know, in these games, and he also kept his play on a high level. Rarely saw him, you know, drop down. He led this platform and was second on the teams in tackles with 105 tackles, including the sack and 3 forced fumbles. Knowing that he's the Mike linebacker, he helped the defense to be in the right position on the field to make plays. And so he had a huge impact this year for the Washington Redskins, and I do not see his play dropping off for the years to come. Last year, 2019, was a learning thing for him, understanding the speed of the game. As next year comes around, the second year, I think that he's going to be on par and each year, at least for the next two seasons, where he'll learn the game a little bit more. And then entering his fourth year, I would not be surprised within that time he will become a Pro Bowl player because he's that good, he's that talented, and he definitely had himself a fantastic year, not only for himself but for the Washington Redskins and helping to show how viable this platform is that was actually invested by the NFL football operation. Number two, Austin Ridder, center for the Kansas City Chiefs, cannot not have him ranked this high. Not only was he was a central part, one of the central factors for the Kansas City Chiefs to win Super Bowl 54, but as the center and playing in 1,000, not including the playoffs, for him to play for employee in 1,044 snaps this season, the most he had in one season after he himself was drafted by the Washington Redskins in 2006, wound up finding himself on the Cleveland Browns after being with the Redskins for about two seasons, signed in the middle of the 2018 season with the Chiefs, and when the Chiefs decided to move on from Mitch Moyes, they decided that's when Austin signed a two-year extension last December with the Chiefs, and the Chiefs knew that they had their man under center. And within the snaps, on 1,044 snaps, he was only caught holding 5 times. Folks, that's amazing. And this speed of this game, with all the pressure that comes up in the middle, so much that Patrick Mahomes went to, as a quarterback, not just Patrick Mahomes, how it's important to keep that middle protected to keep the defenders off their quarterback is a tremendous responsibility. And for him to only get caught only holding 5 times and not get caught with no penalty during the postseason, that was fantastic. So Austin did his thing. He came out as the number two guy from the platform for the 2019 season. CJ Ham, I know you guys are not too familiar with him, but he's the fullback for the Minnesota Vikings. Now, he's one of those guys that when you look at his stats, You know, it's not really impressive. You really don't show something that you would just jump off and say, oh, yeah, he's going to be, you know, a show enough star in this league. It doesn't come off like that. Matter of fact, when you look at his numbers, he only carried the ball 7 times for 17 yards and caught the ball, had 17 receptions for 149. So when you look at those stats, you say, what? What's so special about him? Well, as a fullback of versatile, that not only can do fullback things, but also can line up in a spread, wide packages, and also in the slant for someone to be able to catch the ball. And a lot of his passes were not just from the backfield. It was actually from him running route. So that stood up. And for him to help lead a rushing attack, sixth best in the league, that says a lot, because what he does as a fullback does not show up on paper. How he paved holes for Devon Cook, how he's helped provide that protection for Kirk Cousins. A lot of things, you know, being able to lead blocks down the field, that says a lot about his ability to play in this league and how much of an impact and help the Vikings to be competitive all the way into the playoffs. Ham's success this year earned him his first Pro Bowl spot, and he was the only representative from the NFL Regional Combine to make the Pro Bowl this year. So hats off to CJ for having an excellent 2019 season and for him finishing in as the number three, top three for the NFL Regional Combine platform, pioneers that made the top 10 list for that process. Number four, Nick Needham, who was a rookie cornerback from the Miami Dolphins, came in as a practice squad player. Within week five, he was able to, you know, jump in and be a factor right away. As a matter of fact, the first time he was active in the NFL, Chucks, he was a starter, and he only missed one game after that, the following game, where he did not start, but he started the rest of the game and finished the season strong. He finished with 54 tackles, a sack, and a forced fumble, and two interceptions. So he pretty much filled the chart as a rookie for the Miami Dolphins. He, too, is one of those players that, you know, recognizing the speed of the game, within 2 years from now, I can see that he's going to, you know, become a very important piece for the Miami Dolphins, considering that the Miami Dolphins will definitely keep him in near the South Beach area where he can grow and become more of an effective NFL player. So Nick rounding up the fourth best player from the combine for the 2019 season. Number five, Kenny Moore, the second cornerback for the Indianapolis Colts. Kenny Moore has been a solid player ever since he came into the NFL in 2016. Solid player. Got paid over the offseason last year as pretty much the highest paid slot corner in the NFL. He had himself more of a rocky season. You know, he did spend some time on the sideline with injuries, but he still finished strong with 61 tackles, including 2.5 sacks, with a career high in himself, 2 interceptions. So with him and the Indianapolis Colts, the Colts are going places. To know that Moore, one of the NFL Regional Combine pioneers, is going to be a part of that, that's a great thing there. So hats off to Kenny Moore and finishing out number five. Number six, Brandon Copeland, linebacker for the New York Jets. Now, he missed the first 4 games because of a violation of the substance abuse policy of the NFL. Copeland, solid guy, came through the process, even went to the veteran combine, came through there to get back into the league, one of the very few guys that was successful enough to do the veteran combine and still was able to find success back into the NFL where he's been solid ever since. After missing those 4 games, something that he's actually, I think he actually went into litigation to sue a certain company for the substance that he was taking, because one thing he is not is a cheater. He's definitely a legitimate player in this league, and he works extremely hard. And he's worked extremely hard off the field with a whole bunch of programs that he's establishing. Looking forward to him coming on Locker Talk sometime soon as well. But he had finished his campaign this year with career high with 42 tackles. Number seven, his teammate, rookie defensive end Cal, came through the process last year, worked him out down in Tampa. Very quiet young man that really gets he just come and do his job and leave. You know, he's not a rah-rah type of guy that's going to pound his chest. He's going to do his job and move forward. He wound up finishing seventh with the NFL Regional Combine. And then if you look at where he ranked with Pro Football Focus, where they had him at 44 in the top 50 rookies for the NFL season, it was great to see that he had made that list. Really don't understand why Nick Needham and Colt McCoy did not make that list, but that's all right. That's why we have this list here about the Regional Combine players, because we want to make sure that everyone from the platform definitely get recognized for their excellence this year, and Kyle Phillips is definitely one of them. Number eight, Vincent Smith, another Jet, Limestone College first player to enter into the NFL, who was with the Houston Texans, got signed off by Ravens with the Jets in September. Came to the Jets and was impactful as a special teams player, and also when he was, he also used him as a third option at wide receiver. He had himself his best year as well. He definitely got, I would say, the game, got the speed down. He's one of the fastest guys in the NFL. He pretty much ran a 4.3, and he was able to find the end zone in week 5 against the Philadelphia Eagles, the same team he got his first touchdown on when he was a rookie with the Houston Texans in week 16 of the 2018 season. So hats off to Vincent Smith, excellent return man, making this list for the Regional Combine. Number 9, Roy Robinson-Harris, defensive end slash tackle for the Chicago Bears. He had himself a solid year for the Chicago Bears. And then number 10 to round it off, Vincent Manua, defensive end for the Las Vegas Raiders, had his best year as a pro. He had, he's a sack master, under the radar, so to speak, but he had himself a career high with 7 sacks this season, making himself an established edge rusher in the NFL. Well, folks, that was the top 10. Look out for that piece to come out on LockerDashReport.com within a matter of a couple of hours. So make sure you guys tune in to check that piece out to get more of a breakdown of what those guys were able to do to make the top 10 list for the 2019 season from the NFL Regional Combine platform. You guys listen to Locker Talk with host Barry Bonds on the Basket News Radio Network, where you hear about NFL stars of tomorrow today. You heard about some stars today, folks. Make sure you guys tune in next week, where we get into some more talk with the NFL Regional Combine platform as we spin here counting down to the workouts in Miami. You guys can always reach out to me directly on Twitter at @Locker_Report, on Instagram, LockReport100, all smart cats, on Facebook, LockReport.com, and also check out Locker Talk Podcast on Facebook as well. And you guys can always shoot me a message directly via email at BarryBonds@Locker-Report.com. Everyone be safe. Continue to preach on the good news about the Black History Month as we move forward. Hopefully I have something else special in regards to football dealing with Black History Month next week. Make sure you guys tune in and stay locked in. Even on TuneIn, check out Bassam News Radio Network. Everyone stay blessed. Have yourself a great, great weekend.
Join Barry Bonds for Locker Talk on the Bachelor Pad Network as he presents NFL news and evaluates players Fridays at 9 a.m. Eastern at blogtalkradio.com.
The Mighty Over. Today we have one of the most distinguished guests we have ever had. He is part of the longest legacy of black journalism in Western New York, my good friend, Brother Frank Merriweather III.
Patrick.
You have to distinguish that, the third, because there are three
That's right.
Franks.
Yes,
and
yes.
A lot of people get them confused. Am I correct?
Pat, they do. Thank you for having me on the show. I'm glad to be in the house with the Oba.
We're going to have some fun while we're here. Hope everybody tunes in because a lot of times they don't get an opportunity to hear Frank really disseminate some of the history of black journalism in Western New York, and he has played a major, major part in that for several years. First, Frank, I wanted to ask you, how did the Merriweathers arrive here in Buffalo and Western New York?
Pat, Texas, Tuskegee, New York City, and to our humble abode here in Buffalo, New York, or their humble abode, Western New York. My grandparents were from the southern part of Texas and actually went to Tuskegee University and did some traveling around the country. At least my granddad did. My grandmother was a school teacher in Texas. And ended up in New York City. My granddad, Frank Merriweather Sr.'s very good friend, Adam Clayton Powell Sr., was able to get him a job in the printing industry in the New York City area.
Mm-hmm.
He was there for a little bit. In fact, my grandmother was there for a little bit. Didn't necessarily like the environment per se in New York for raising children. She goes back to Texas, and granddad lands a job in Buffalo. Mm. And the rest is history, I guess, Pat, huh? And I guess I should clarify those dates. I would say maybe around 1920 ended up here in Buffalo. And then went into business and started the Buffalo Criterion Press, which was a printing outfit there. And they did what you call job work, tickets, posters, raffles, church bulletins.
Invitations, things like that. Was that the basis of the relationship, the long relationship with the black church? Did it
absolutely
start from the printing business?
Yeah, because, you know, at that time, you didn't have mimeograph machines. And so we did a lot of church programs, anniversaries, and that kind of thing. And so that was maybe our introduction into the black church. And then at that time, too, very small population in terms of the black community here. So it was pretty close-knit, I understand. And my grandfather had an interest in politics as well, and so...
Now, he was a Republican.
He was a Republican at
now,
that time.
Now, people need to realize
yeah,
that back then...
That's right.
Most Africans that lived here in America
that's
were
Republican
if they were politically active.
That's right, based on Abraham Lincoln.
Right.
Yeah, in fact, there's a term, Lincoln Republican.
Right.
Yeah, and so... he had a real do-for-self kind of attitude, which was instilled at Tuskegee in terms of dropping your bucket where you were and going to work.
Mm.
And prior to going into the printing business, he did a lot of other things. He was a tailor by trade, worked at a jewelry store, worked on the railroad. So he did a number of different ventures, per se, before landing here. And he did like Buffalo.
And your grandmother was Carmelita.
My grandmother's Carmelita Merriweather. She came and was very active. In fact, they started a Republican club called the Booker T. Washington Republican Club. The woman's auxiliary was the Martha Washington Republican Club. And they did a lot of things like voter registration, voter education, that kind of thing. You don't necessarily hear about voter education now.
Mm.
There's a lot of emphasis on registration and such, and I guess maybe that's the intro per se to politics, but after that, the education component.
Were you familiar with your grandparents? Did you get to meet them?
Oh, yeah. In fact, you know, it was a funny thing, especially, you know, my grandmother. I actually saw my grandmother 5 days a week, 5 to 7 days a week.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, she was a very integral part of our business. And, you know, just as a youngster, I saw her do some very, very, very amazing things that at that time in my youth, I hadn't seen any other woman in the newspaper business do.
Mm-hmm.
She covered stories. She sold ads. She was active in a lot of the clubs. But the business end, she was able to work, I use the term, in the front office. And in the back office is where all the printing and all of the typesetting and all of that takes place.
Mm-hmm.
And so she just wasn't able to take news in or take an order in for a poster or a raffle ticket or a program. She was able to typeset that work and then put it on a press and give you a finished product.
So when did the Buffalo Criterion really start as a weekly newspaper? What
1925. Yeah, yeah. Comes in at that time with the famous Michigan Avenue Y,
mm-hmm,
and Urban League. Those organizations were about 2 years apart. We started in 23. I believe the Michigan Avenue Y, 1925, and the Urban League, which was known as the Chapel.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether, I guess it grew out. I don't specifically know the history of the Urban League, but I know they started in 1927.
Mm.
Yeah, so we're just a few years apart.
Now tell me the early years of the Buffalo Criterion. How did they, how many were they putting out there? Was it?
Well, it was a, you know, as I said, at that time, and, you know, I just spoke to some young people not long ago, and I was saying at that time, communities were always pushing for civil rights, and you had to have a means of communication. Now, no Skype, Pat.
Right.
You know, no Facebook. You know what I'm saying? You know, and oftentimes when we hear about the civil rights movement, not much is really said about the black press, but that was the means of communication,
right,
that we had. It was the black press, the civil rights organization, and the church, because usually that was the venue,
right,
in which we were able to get large amounts of folks there. So, but as I said, not much is said.
Was that the bulk of the distribution of the church?
Well, yeah,
the churches?
But also we had a partnership with the black civil rights organizations, because really at that time it was a concerted effort to forward the black community.
Mm-hmm.
And so you were using every means at your disposal at that point to do some of the work, because, you know, oftentimes you forget when you're looking to do that kind of work, man, it's a lot of heavy lifting. Everybody has a little part to play, you know, in that. And the black press's role was to get that word out and really to distinguish your story from that of major media.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's where that theme that you oftentimes put on the paper, we want to tell our own story.
Well, yeah, that and our theme for a number of years is educating and building, you know, because that's the thing that you really want to do. you want to educate people as in terms of or telling your story. I think that's just the most important kind of thing. Setting out your history so that, Pat, you know I like to take pictures.
Right. Know. That's your thing.
But one of the reasons why I do that, because I say that if we look at something 10, 15, 20 years from now,
mm-hmm.
what would be, we're not necessarily, we're able to do it now, but years ago you weren't able to resurrect the speech, but you could look at the picture.
Right.
And the story that's on that.
Absolutely.
And so all over the world, folks are looking for little tidbits of history. That's your map.
Right.
Yeah, that's
your
map.
The picture speaks a thousand words.
Now
tell me about Frank Sr. and Carmelita's their children,
okay.
Your aunts and uncles,
yep.
and your dad.
Right, okay. They four children.
Mm-hmm.
The oldest was Hewitt Curry. She was a well-known musician, taught voice, piano, organ, directed choirs, and worked in gospel circles here for many, 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 many years. That's the oldest. Dad was the second oldest, Frank Merriweather Jr.
Frank Merriweather Jr.
We're stressing, right?
Because so many people confuse.
Right.
Frank Merriweather Jr. is the name attached to Frank Merriweather Library, which is
right.
next door.
Right. So Frank Merriweather Jr. And right under was Thyra Charles. She was one of the first black nurses here
mm-hmm.
in the city. And the baby of the group is Judge Barbara Sims.
Judge Barbara Sims.
Yeah. And
she just transitioned a couple years ago.
And she left a wonderful legacy in terms of
Absolutely.
The legal profession.
Yes.
Did a number of things as first black judge, first black woman to work in the DA's office, and did a lot of heavy lifting. In that, in the legal industry, period.
Now, getting to your dad, was your dad the heir apparent to pick up the business?
Well, Dad had worked at, you know, it's funny, the girls, per se, kind of went off into their own professions. Per se, as I said, my oldest aunt went into music, Thyra went into nursing,
mm-hmm.
And Barbara went into, actually, a lot of folks don't know, she was a school teacher. Barbara
mm-hmm.
Sims was a school teacher and scored number one on the teacher's exam. I guess that was, we'd be back in the early 50s.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and taught school for a number of years and then went into the legal profession. Yeah. But Dad always worked in the business there, and I'm thankful to the Lord that He chose my dad and my mother, Evelyn Patterson Ferguson,
mm-hmm.
as a means for me and my four siblings to venture into this place called Earth.
Right.
I'm really thankful for them because. They did a lot. They worked really hard, and they were good parents to us. You know,
right.
I often think about just life lessons that they passed along. And my mother was really able to come in. She's kind of quiet, but still works and still participates in the business. And she's really the publisher.
Mm-hmm.
And I told her she's one of the top CEOs in all of Western New York, still working, still doing her thing, but really came in and was a wonderful, wonderful help me with my dad in terms of the second leg, per se, of the Criterion. Just was a fast learner. Picked up a whole lot of different things and was able really, you know, to carry things on after Dad passed, yeah.
Now, how big of an it had to be a huge operation back in the day of photography and printing and putting out a paper.
Well, if you look back at a number of, because, you know, there were other newspapers here as well, but I think that revolutionized things in terms of the black press, in terms of putting in a photography and an engraving department.
Mm-hmm.
That was one thing. And, you know, Pat, I only know, now there may be others, but I only know two families that produced their own product. And that was the Smitherman family, who had the Buffalo Star,
mm-hmm.
and the Buffalo Criterion. Now, the Smitherman family, they had a connection to the race riots in Oklahoma.
Okay.
Yeah, A.J. Smitherman.
Okay.
Was the editor and founder of the Star. And as I said, he had a few years ago, he was the Uncrowned Queens did some work in his death to get a warrant removed,
mm-hmm.
From him that went way back to the Oklahoma race riots.
Okay,
Tulsa, Oklahoma race riots. So, but they produced their own paper,
mm-hmm.
and we did too. But it was the difference is that we had put in an engraving department, which meant that you could now add pictures, and everything was produced in house per se. In other words, maybe 98% of the work that was done right inside our shop. We were actual real newspaper publishers,
mm-hmm.
meaning that we produced that product.
Mm.
Yeah, we produced that product. And, you know, there was even an issue back in the day, you know, when Dad first decided to put this engraving department in, you know, he just wasn't able to go out and get a press camera. You know, there was some credentials, some other kind of things that he had to deal with, even in terms of law enforcement.
Right.
Yeah, you know, what are you going to do? What pictures are you going to take? Who are you going to send them to?
Was there any pushback from any other communities on the production of a black press back then?
Well, I don't think back then. I think that I don't think Frank Merriweather Sr. maybe didn't have to necessarily deal with that.
Okay.
I think that's because maybe the black community was small, and sometimes it's like in anything else. If a guy over across the street is doing well, Pat, and you're over here, and you're a small organization, they're not necessarily so worried about you.
Right.
You know, they just continue to work, and you continue to work, and you don't. And then the other thing too is there was an issue in terms of, again, telling our own story.
Right.
Yeah. You know, without some of sharp corners per se, they were able to round off the edges. They knew the people that they were dealing with, and you got a more focused presentation per se of the happening or the event. Yeah, yeah. And then small population. I get emails from all over.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody is having something now, and it necessary. I don't think that the Frank and Carmelita Merriweather necessarily had to deal with it at that point.
How did they learn this business?
Tuskegee College. Yeah, they were.
Tuskegee was integral in teaching.
Oh, absolutely.
Trades.
You know, and that more than one trade.
Yes.
You know, more than one trade, as I said. My grandfather, I know he was a tailor. He had an actual a degree in tailoring.
Okay.
Yeah, from that machine shop. We were on 367 William, and that facility, they needed to enlarge that place, and that was something that they were able to do themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, lay the brick, mix the mortar, you know, run the wires. It's not like it is now, but they believed in real craftsmanship and putting out a real A number one product, you know.
Now let's talk about Frank Jr.
Frank Jr.
Frank Jr. Picked up the mantle.
Picked up the mantle. And
did your Aunt Barbara play any role of the legal advice or?
Oh, absolutely. And Pat, if I can, I just want to step back to Frank Meriwether Sr.,
mm-hmm.
who went from the printing business into the newspaper business, which meant, you know, in my eyes, that he went really to the next level.
Yes.
Because everything at the newspaper level is bigger, meaning the machinery is bigger, the process is bigger, what you're doing is bigger, because really to put out a weekly paper, it's an awful lot of work.
A lot of work.
And at that time, that the process in which they were doing it, which was a letterpress process, was hard, heavy kind of work.
Mm.
You know, I'm not going to say most.
Mm-hmm.
All of our time in the newspaper business, we've put out a broadsheet paper, which not tabloid size, but we've always put out a broadsheet is a full sheet.
Mm-hmm.
Tabloid is usually a half the size of a broadsheet paper. So we've always put out a broadsheet paper. And then just, Pat, if we take our phone, you know, or any means, everything is always changing. It's changing
yes.
every day. It's changing every day, man. So I went to charge my phone, and the young lady told me that her charger wouldn't fit mine because I had I don't even know what I had, Pat. I had something that her charger wouldn't fit mine. I think she said she had an LX7 or LX.
Yeah, there's all different.
Yeah.
It's constantly something.
Yeah, she said, "Mr. Frank, you know, you have an Android." So
mm-hmm.
I said, okay, all right. So, but the technology has changed, and even back then, you know, it was changing.
Let me ask you this: did your grand? I knew he was active politically. Did he hold any appointments or offices?
Yeah, he was one of. I don't want to give you the right information, but he was one of the first blacks that worked in the New York State Assembly.
Yes.
As a clerk to Assemblyman, I think it was Barnhart.
Mm-hmm.
He worked there, and he did a number of jobs in terms of, probably the term, Pat, is appointments.
Okay.
That he had. I know he was in charge of the bathhouse on William Street. And maybe some other work. He worked in terms of dispensing news from the war into the black community as
okay.
well, too. Yeah. So that might have not been an official position, but access to the news so that the black community would be informed on that kind of work.
Yeah. Now, when did your dad begin moving into taking over?
Well, he had always, you know, it was a funny thing. My grandmother, the editorial part, Frank Meriwether Sr. took care of most of that. Now, Dad did, too, later on. But the day-to-day operation, that was my father and my grandmother.
Okay.
On that, yeah.
We'll be right back.